From WHYY, this is Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscoane. You know, a decade ago, the United States led the world in college graduation rates. Well, now we have fallen to 12th place globally in the number of young adults who hold an associate's degree or more. And while 70% of high school students do enroll in higher education of some sort, only 57% of that number graduates, and the numbers are worse for minorities and low-income students. And in Philadelphia, fewer than half the high school graduates will earn a college degree. Now, high tuition rates certainly are a big factor, but there are lots of other reasons that students who start college don't finish. So this hour, we're talking about the myriad reasons college students don't graduate and what families, schools, and the government can do to help them stay the course. We have two guests today, Hadass Sheffer, the founding executive director of Graduate Philadelphia. It's an initiative designed to increase the number of adult college grads and student college grads as well. She works with employers, labor, community-based organizations, colleges, and foundations to help students navigate that process. Welcome, Hadass, to Radio Times.
Hello.
And Laura Perna is a professor in the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania, where she works on issues related to college access and success, particularly for racial and ethnic minorities and those from low-income families. She currently is working with the U.S. Department of Education to help develop policies that encourage college completion. Laura, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Laura, tell us, what are some of these factors that led to the United States falling from first place to 12th in the last 10 years or so when it comes to college graduation?
There are a whole host of factors, and that's part of the challenge of trying to address this problem. There's so many things that matter. So completion certainly is an issue, and the statistics that you gave are really important and troubling. But completion is part of a pipeline, so we have issues around academic readiness to go to college. We have issues around who's going to college and who's going to what types of colleges. We have issues around the affordability of higher education. We have issues with regard to what the entities are that are providing support for higher education. So there's the role of the many players that you mentioned, families, high schools, colleges, universities, state government, federal government.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things that are keeping, and it's not just the high tuition, which many people tend to think of first. Let's talk a little bit about the academic preparedness and the fact that probably both of you are seeing students who are getting into the college mix and are not necessarily academically prepared and are already sort of starting out behind the eight ball. Hadass, what are you seeing, you know, when you work with students, you work with even adults who are looking to go back to college? What are you seeing in terms of a lack of preparedness? What kinds of problems has that created?
We're seeing a lack of preparedness in literacy skills, English. I think about 50 to 70% of students heading into college now in Philadelphia require some remediation, at least one course of remediation.
Wow.
In English.
What was that percentage again?
50 to 70%.
Wow.
And a similar percent who require some math remediation. And when you take someone who is fresh out of high school, has their mm-hmm. diploma, or has completed a GED, or even has some college in the past, and you say to them, you're going into college, but you're not really going into college. Now you have to start at a lower level, mm-hmm. a pre-collegiate level. I think the psychological implication is I'm not college material. The way that remediation is set up is also can be very hard for people to persevere. And to come out of remediation and enroll in college proper. So I think what we're seeing, some of the national numbers are that about 50% of students will require some remediation, and only 10% of them, one out of every five, will actually finish that within 3 years and go into a college-level program. Mm-hmm. Now, the numbers for specific colleges may be different for specific community colleges that do a lot of this remediation, but it's a huge problem. Yeah. Remediation can stop someone in their tracks from ever really getting to college.
Yeah, and it's not something that can necessarily be done over the summer. You know, take a few courses, and then you're ready to jump in with everybody else in September, I would think.
I think that there is a very broad range of remedial needs, and some of them can absolutely be done over the summer. Some of them can be done in a few weeks. Some of them require longer remediation time.
Yeah. Laura, I can't imagine that this is a huge problem at a university like Penn.
No, it's not a problem at Penn, but it's a very small share of students are going to institutions like Penn. Many more of our students are going to less selective four-year colleges, public two-year colleges, for-profit institutions. And at those institutions, this is a real issue.
Yeah. And it really speaks to, then, the preparedness at the high school level, at the middle school level, even perhaps at the elementary school level. What's being done to address that so that these kids are coming out of high school prepared to go to college? Now you've got to sort of backtrack a few steps, I would think.
This is a really systemic problem that we are making such slow progress addressing. We have a clear lack of alignment of curriculum between the K-12 system and the higher education in this nation. And it's a lack of alignment around assessment as well. So, for example, the tests, so now each state is required through No Child Left Behind to have tests that students take throughout their elementary and secondary education. And the standards that are required to pass those tests are not aligned with what's required to enter college without requiring some remedial education, right? And so we don't have a system in place that is correctly putting the preparation, making sure that all students are prepared.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because there's so much talk about this notion of teaching to the test, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, students or teachers get frustrated because they can't teach necessarily the way they want to, because they've got to prepare these students for these tests. But to what end if that sort of teaching doesn't prepare them ultimately for college?
Right. So what's going on in high school is very rational, right? You're rewarded for passing a particular test, and you people who are in that system expect that passing that test will mean something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It doesn't mean that if you pass the test, you're academically ready to enter and succeed in college. So we have, been doing some work, a 5-state policy review study, where we've been going into different states to understand what the policies are in place around this. A number of states have councils in place that they're trying to bring together people at the K-12 and the higher education systems together. But the progress in terms of really aligning curriculum and assessment in a meaningful type of way, where everyone respects that these are the right types of standards and this is the right type of content, the progress has been very depressingly slow.
Mm.
Hadass? You know, one of the ways that I think we're looking at this now that is different from when we started doing this work about 7 or 8 years ago is that we are looking at all the interactions of the different systems. And we are looking also at outcomes, at long-term outcomes, and at risk factors. So we're seeing that while the school system, whatever means brings the youth up to graduation of a high school, also interacts with, for example, the family systems. And we know that the highest risk factor for anyone for not completing high school and then being at high risk for dropping out of college is whether their parents finished college or not.
Really?
So even as we build up the high school systems to prepare students better for college, what we think at Graduate is that the fastest way actually to put more pressure on these systems, on the secondary systems, is to get more parents to finish their college degrees. Mm. We know that parents with college degrees, it's not that they understand better the need to educate their children. Every parent understands that. But they know how. They know how to navigate the systems. Mm-hmm. They know where to put pressure. So with every parent that now has a college degree, you have a multiplier effect of as many children as they have, their nieces and nephews, the people in their extended family who now understand that complete pathway, not just to high school graduation, but all the way to college graduation and to having a successful career track.
Mm. Laura?
Well, so along those lines, I think what Hadass is saying really underscores how important it is to pay attention to who's getting access to what types of opportunities. So college enrollment and college success rates are substantially lower for students who are first-generation college, whose parents haven't gone to college, as well as students from lower family incomes, racial, ethnic minority groups. And the inequities start very young, right? So there's clear difference in the types of resources that are available in the high schools that people attend based on their social class, which is related to parental education, based on their family income, based on their race, ethnicity. Those resources include the rigor of the academic courses that are available in the high school. They also include other types of support systems. So the availability of counselors, college-related counseling in the school varies tremendously based on the social class and the characteristics of the students that are being served in those schools. And so we have to think about how these, how the systems we have in place are really perpetuating the stratification of opportunity.
And I'm thinking, too, that another factor, and maybe some of these same kids are hit the hardest by this, is having to work. I mean, once you do get into college, with tuition being what it is in so many schools, a lot of these kids are having to work a lot of hours. I've got to believe that you're seeing that, Hadass, with some of the people that you're working with, and particularly the older adults who are going back, who have been working and need to continue working, especially if they want to go to school.
Correct. There's an interesting correlation there. So working some hours seems to help people stay in college more. But there's a cutoff at about 20 hours a week. So if you have the structure that forces you to get up in the morning, go to work, you're very task-driven, you understand how your day needs to be structured, that seems to help students get through college. But working more than about 20 hours a week undermines your ability to attend classes. And then there's the struggle of if you have to go to your job versus going to class, which one do you choose? We're seeing also there's a financial interaction there. If you work just a little, if you earn just a little bit over some threshold, then you'll be eligible for less financial aid the following year. And that threshold is impossible to determine ahead of time. So it's a very delicate balancing act of how much work is enough to sustain yourself, your family, how much work is going to put you at risk of not finishing your degree, what the opportunity costs are for going to college full-time versus working. It becomes very, very complex. And I think the guidance that is given to high school students and their parents often doesn't have the capacity to look at this very, very complex picture. And what we're seeing, the difference between families that have been to college, is that this understanding is imbued inside the family already. Kids grow up understanding a lot of these internal conflicts and how to approach them, and that college is a system that needs to be navigated just like any other system. Versus children from families where there is no prior history of college completion see getting into college maybe as the goal, not understanding that there's the day after and the life after you get into college and what that now looks like and how to balance all these multiple obligations that are now a necessity, I think, not just of adult students, but as Laura said, more and more of the young students, they have to work to sustain themselves through college.
We are going to take a short break, but we are talking about college retention, and the numbers are pretty alarming for those who enter colleges, or community colleges for that matter, and don't come out with a degree. So we'll be talking about that. We would welcome your comments, perhaps your experiences. Maybe you're looking to go back to school. Maybe you are right in that threshold now where you're considering dropping out. You have dropped out. We'd love to hear your thoughts as well. The number is 888-477-9499, and Radio Times will be back right after this.
Christiana Care Health System's Center for Heart and Vascular Health supports WHYY. Studies show experience makes a difference in patient outcomes. Recognized by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, ChristianaCare cardiovascular surgeons perform more than 800 open heart procedures each year, and the team of heart specialists treats more than 8,000 total heart and vascular patients annually. ChristianaCare, with locations in Pennsylvania and Delaware. More online at christianacare.org/heartleaders.
I'm Marty Moscowane.
I'm Terry Gross.
And I'm Dave Davies. Help WHYY celebrate 25 years of Radio Times and Fresh Air at a special live event.
Dave will ask the questions. Marty and I will have to answer them at the Suzanne Roberts Theater in Philadelphia.
It all happens Monday, June 4th at 7, and you can reserve your tickets at whyy.org/member experience.
Celebrate 25 years of public media's best, Radio Times and Fresh Air.
The 80 social service programs supported by the Catholic Charities Appeal work to assist people across the region, like the teenager who grew up on the streets who is now a certified business software specialist, or the young woman with Down syndrome who now has a job in retail. Loyal contributors, plus thousands of new and lapsed donors, are stepping up to help in these challenging times. But the challenges of those in need are harder than most of us may ever face. Learn how to help at CatholicCharitiesAppeal.org. Catholic Charities Appeal supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. And if you have children of a certain age, they may have just come home from college or just be on their way home from a year of college. We're talking about not just getting into college, but we're talking about the difficulties in keeping children in college and the difficulties for adults who want to go back to college who have dropped out. Pretty staggering numbers when you look at the number of people who enter four-year colleges or community colleges and end up coming out without a degree. And the numbers are worse for minorities, for low-income students, but there are a lot of efforts underway to help make sure that more and more of these students are staying the course and coming out with the degree that they went into college to get. We've been talking with Hadass Sheffer. She is founding executive director of Graduate Philadelphia. It's a collaborative initiative to increase the number of adult college graduates. We also have with us Laura Perna, who is a professor in the Graduate School of Education at Penn, and she works on issues related to college access and success, particularly for racial and ethnic minorities and individuals of lower socioeconomic status. So we're talking about how to keep students in college once we get them there. And we'd love to hear from you if you've got a story, if you have dropped out of college, if you are considering dropping out, or perhaps you've left a long time ago, you're thinking about going back, whatever your experience has been, we'd love you to share that with us. The number to call is 888-477-9499. We left off, Laura, and we were talking about the issue of work and how much is too much. What is that threshold where it becomes a little too much, not only for the student in terms of their ability to stay focused on school, but then, you know, earning too much and maybe not qualifying for some of the financial aid. And I know you had something you wanted to add to that.
Right. So the research is so clear that students should work between, that work, as Hadass said, working some amount of time is good, you know, 15 hours per week on campus. But that's not the norm now. You know, such a small share of students are actually doing that. Our colleges haven't adjusted to this. So, you know, so students are working for a variety of reasons. Some don't want to take loans. They don't want to borrow, so they're only working. Some see working as part of their identity, so they want to keep working. And some really need to pay to work in order to pay for costs. But colleges, I think, many are treating and assuming that most students are entering full-time, they're working that 15 hours per week on campus. They don't recognize the whole host of other things that many of our students are trying to do, working as well as having families and having a whole host of other responsibilities. So I think there needs to be more attention to thinking about the ways we're offering support services to students who have a variety of needs, to thinking about the ways that we can recognize work as a synergistic activity to education, right? So it's a way to it's another way to build human capital. So there could be some ways to help recognize the value of work that enhances education. And really providing some counseling to help people understand what is, given your individual circumstances, what is the right amount to work and what's the right amount to borrow.
Mm-hmm. And keeping that sort of delicate balance so that everything works
right
for the student.
That's right.
Hadass, you mentioned affordability, that's a huge issue, and that's why so many of these kids are working the way that they are, just to try to get through college. And there's a lot of fear about, you know, coming out with lots of debt. What do you say to that?
First of all, I think people need to read through what's in the media carefully. So when we hear about the Harvard graduate who has $100,000 in debt, and we encounter someone who went to a state school or to Temple or to the community college, we can assure them that they're probably not going to graduate with $150,000 or $200,000 in debt. We need to understand better what is good debt and what is bad debt. Mm. There are a lot of resources still available that come under what we would consider manageable debt. Federally available aid that a lot of people are really not taking advantage of. When we think of what students should take on, the last thing, the absolutely last source of financing for college that anyone should attempt is to go to a private lender. Yeah. There are huge issues with private lending practices. Some of them are okay. Some of them are downright predatory. The thing to remember is that they cannot be shed. Student loan debt cannot be shed in bankruptcy. So we're seeing people saying, well, I'll just declare bankruptcy. Well, your private student loans are not going to go away.
Yeah, you can't walk away from that like people walk away from mortgages and that sort of thing.
And it's a bad idea. Right. It's a bad idea to declare bankruptcy in any case unless you're absolutely forced to. But then there are a lot of federal resources that are still available to students. And we see people saying, I'm too old. So I'm not 24 anymore, so I don't think I can apply for federal aid, or I earn too much. And they're really, for most of the federal aid packets, they're, most people could still apply, still take out federally guaranteed loans, federally secured loans.
And that's one of those issues, one of those navigational issues, Hadas, right, that maybe a lot of students aren't even aware of, and especially if their parents have not gone to college. They may not even be aware of the huge differences between, say, a federal loan and a private loan.
There's that. Right. So there's lack of information. There are many reasons why people go to private loans versus to federal loans. And I think a lot of those are misconceptions. They think that you can get a private loan faster. They think that sometimes the terms seem better because maybe at that time in the market, the private lenders are offering, an interest rate that seems to be better than the federal rate. But if you look long term, if you look at a 30-year repayment plan, what does that look like? Some people just trust their local bank more than they would trust the government. So there are multiple reasons, I think, for people not turning first to the federal programs.
So certainly one piece of advice for anyone who's listening is to apply for financial aid. There are data that show that how many people there are who are eligible for financial aid who are not receiving it because they haven't applied. That being said, there's a lot of complexity to the financial aid system that makes it does make it hard to navigate this. Yeah. We have financial aid that's provided by federal government, state government, colleges, universities. Processes and applications vary. The types of information that's required can be quite confusing. And then you get your award letter, and it's not always easy to see what types of aid you have and understand the difference between a grant and a loan. Yeah. So asking questions around those issues is really important. I just have a couple of cautions, though. So for most students, borrowing does pay off. You know, students are borrowing reasonable amounts. They're completing programs. They're getting jobs, and they can repay the loan. For a notable share, though, borrowing is risky, right? So if they don't complete the program, then they still have this loan that they have to pay off, and they don't have the higher salary that comes from the job that you're supposed to get when you're finished, right? Then there's also the broader context around affordability. So affordability has been declining in this country. So even though most students are attending not the Harvards of the world, but less expensive institutions, tuition's been increasing at all types of colleges and universities. And it's increasing at a rate that's faster than the rate of increase in family income. And so that causes challenges for families. You know, we have some real important state policy issues. You know, states play a very important role in funding higher education in this state. In this nation, a lot of states are under a lot of pressure right now. They don't have enough money to fund everything that they need to fund, and higher education is getting less of those dollars, and that's having real consequences for students and their families.
Well, we've seen that in Pennsylvania with the proposed budget. There are big cuts in store for, you know, the Penn States, the Temples, schools like that, so that is a factor. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Camden, and we'll welcome Sean to Radio Times. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Your comment
or
question.
I work with young adults in Camden with an organization that I'm a part of, Young Urban Leaders, and I realize there are a lot of young people, young adults that have dropped out of college, and they now owe either the school money, they owe the school money because they dropped out, and financial aid won't cover their classes. So they have to go on a payment plan, and sometimes they don't know they have to go on a payment plan. They have to write an appeal letter. It affects a lot of people, and it seems like a lot of colleges aren't really set up to help students that have dropped out over the years that made a mistake maybe when they were 18 or 19 and they are ready to get back in. So I just wonder if you have any advice for people in that population, or if your organizations have any research that can help me and others help a lot of these college dropouts get back into school.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Sean, for your call. Ladies?
Thank you, Sean. This is what Graduate Philadelphia does, and we're regional. We don't operate just in Philadelphia. We help people navigate the complex issues of going back to college, to whatever college they want to. And part of this is sorting through the debt, sorting through loan burdens that they may have, courses that they took in the past that they may or may not want to pursue in the future. Maybe their whole career goal has changed, and the right place for them is not where they started, but with a different educational outcome. We provide this work one-on-one in group settings, and it's highly rewarding. We've helped more than 1,500 people get back on track to college, and this time they're not dropping out. And most of the work that we're doing is upfront, preparing them for what they're going to have to do once they get back to college. But then we also provide supports as they go through. And we do this in concert with the colleges. So we're helping our partner colleges amplify the services that they already have in place. Yeah. Because you're absolutely right. It has to, once someone is on a college campus, the resources there have to be aligned with what the students need. So there are many ways of getting back on track again, and it can be confusing to start. But what I think we're very fortunate to have in Philadelphia is that we have several initiatives that have been looking at this for several years, and now Philadelphia is a source of inspiration for other regions around the country, which is something we should celebrate more. We have, apart from graduate, we have Philly Goes to College, which is an initiative that comes out of Mayor Nutter's office. We have the Council on College Success and College and Career Success, which is looking at real numbers so that we can know what to do in Philadelphia, not count on national aggregate numbers. We have a college prep consortium, many, many programs that have been around for a long time and are doing a fabulous job. So I think we can continue to build on what is going on in Philadelphia and really be this guiding light that we are emerging to be for other regions.
Laura, are colleges and universities culpable at some level in this picture in terms of maybe placing lots of emphasis on getting kids into college, but maybe not so much on keeping them there?
Well, I think there is clearly a responsibility that colleges and universities need to take on this issue. There are a set of issues around the financing, so providing adequate counseling and so that people understand that they're taking on the loans that they are, and perhaps there are other forms of aid that might be better, and that requires a real... So there are reasons why colleges aren't doing these things very well, but that's, I think, one important area. There's certainly an area around providing the types of support service, the academic and the personal and social support services that recognize the complexity of students' lives and the differences in the academic readiness that they have when they come in, as well as, you know, when you're working, you need to have services available that are at times that are more convenient, right, on weekends and online types of things, and then have faculty also that recognize that students have many things going on in their lives typically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, certainly we can be doing better.
We'll go back to the phones to Wilmington, and we'll bring Anita into our conversation. Hi, Anita. Welcome to Radio Times. Anita, can you hear us? All right. We will come back to Anita, but from what I understand, she's a community college teacher, so it might be interesting to hear from her. Ladies, a few years ago, the big issue was the brain drain, right, where you had students who were graduating from Philadelphia's many wonderful colleges and universities, but often looking for jobs outside of the region. Is that still so much of an issue, or is it really now that the issue is we're not so worried about that, we're worried about just making sure that they finish? Hadass?
Deborah Diamond of Campus Philly, I think, was on this show a few months ago talking about the great advances that Philadelphia has done about the brain drain. So we have doubled the number of young college graduates that we're retaining. our concern at about the same time of the brain-drained conversations in 2003, 2004, when Richard Florida was talking about the creative class and how we should be retaining the 300,000 people that come to our colleges every year. Our concern at the time was that we were investing in people who were coming from away, and we were not investing in people who are here and who are here to stay, who had been here for all their lives and who are not going anywhere. And so when you compare the numbers of native Philadelphians who are going to college and persevering through college, I think those numbers have not changed as drastically as have our advances with people who come from other places to go to our colleges and stay here.
I think this is an important issue also. So when you look at the health and vitality of cities, right, the cities that are really doing very well on a number of economic and social indicators tend to be the cities that have the highest levels of educational attainment. And it means more than just importing people in who already have degrees. It means growing your own and making sure that the people who are born here have the opportunity to succeed here.
Yeah.
There's so many benefits of higher education to individuals and society, and they matter to communities.
I'm pretty sure that I read, getting back to community college, that the numbers are worse there even than for four-year in terms of retention. Is that the case? And if so, why is that? Laura?
Well, so there are a number of issues. So one is how we measure success. And so the indicator that we have success is the percentage of students who enter first-time, full-time, who complete within 150% of the normal course. So 6 years for a four-year degree program, 3 years for a community college program. Part of the reality is that many people who enter community college are not entering for the first time on a full-time basis. So we don't know a lot about what's really happening in terms of success and completion and things like that. A second issue with community colleges is that community colleges were built to do a lot of things. One is to award associate's degrees, but another function is to help students start out at a more affordable, more nurturing type of place and then move on to a four-year college and earn a bachelor's degree. And then community colleges are also offering a whole host of other important functions for our communities. They're offering short-term programs, right? They're offering personal enrichment courses that help improve everyone's lives. So it's really hard to measure what's going on in community colleges. So that's one part of it. A second part is that, you know, they are serving the populations that are hard to serve, right? Mm-hmm. They're the students who have the lowest levels of academic preparation. They're typically students who have lower levels of financial resources. They're typically students whose parents haven't gone to college. They may be living in communities where college is not the norm. So there are a whole host of challenges that community colleges are trying to address in order to help students finish their programs.
Were either of you surprised to see the numbers for retention for community college, given that there seems to have been such a boom in enrollment recently, and a lot of that owing to the fact that the 4 years are so expensive?
Right. So we do have this interesting dynamic going on right now. So students are getting, they're either choosing not to go to four-year college because it's becoming too expensive, or they're getting closed out of four-year colleges as those slots are declining, and they're coming to the community colleges. So the demographic is shifting here. Some community colleges in California, for example, are closing their doors, which is,
wow.
You know, community colleges were built as open access institutions.
Yeah,
this is a problem.
It sure is. We are talking about college retention here on Radio Times. We'd love to hear from you. If you have dropped out of school, perhaps you're a faculty member, you're working to help people stay in school, we'd love to hear from you at 888-477-9499. And we'll be back right after this.
The Philadelphia Inquirer proudly supports WHYY. The Inquirer recently won the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Public Service Journalism for its Assault on Learning multimedia investigative series. News and more. The Inquirer. Your life. Your stories.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. On view now through June 3rd. The 111th Annual Student Exhibition features over 1,000 works of art by PAFA's BFA, Certificate, and MFA students. The Annual Student Exhibition showcases a diversity of style, combining traditional skill and contemporary vision. For details, 215-972-7600 or online at pafa.edu.
Hey everybody, Jad here. I wanted to let you know that Radiolab is coming soon to Philadelphia for a live show. We're calling it In the Dark, and it's all about darkness and light, seeing, believing. It's going to be a super fun night because we've got the comedian Dimitri Martin coming with us, the singer-songwriter Tao Nguyen, and the amazing dance troupe Palabolas. They'll all be there. We'll be there June 29th at the Academy of Music. You can get tickets at radiolab.org.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with available 16-speaker THX surround sound and independent suspension. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about college retention and the alarming numbers of students who are entering college or community college and not finishing. And there are lots of reasons that that happens. You would certainly think high tuition, but many more reasons than that. We've got a pair of guests who are helping us sort of sort through all this and figure out why they're not staying, but more importantly, working toward helping more and more students stay the course. Hadass Sheffer is one of our guests, founding director of Graduate Philadelphia, and that is an initiative that's designed to increase the number of adult college graduates. Our other guest is Laura Perna, who is a professor in the Graduate School of Education at Penn, and she works on issues related to college access and success. So, ladies, when we left off, we were talking about the whole idea of, you know, work being an issue. We've covered a lot of ground here. Before we move on, though, I want to go to the phones, and we'll welcome Ellen to our conversation, calling from Bridgeton. Ellen, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. I am a retired high school guidance counselor, and I currently work as an adjunct advisor at a community college in South Jersey. And so I have a pretty unique perspective on this situation. One thing that I think is often overlooked, I know my high school had a rather large percentage of students with special needs. And on the high school level, they're given all kinds of accommodations and help. And then when these students, through open enrollment, come into our community college, they have to self-identify in order to get any kind of help, whether they have dyslexia, reading comprehension problems. And many of them don't want to self-identify, so they really struggle with developmental level courses, trying to get up to a college level. And I think that's an issue that's often overlooked.
Well, she said, you're exactly right. So the laws are very different around providing accommodations for students who have special needs. And, you know, this is an issue I think the caller is correct, has not been adequately addressed by colleges and universities. You know, some offices, I think, are trying to figure out how to be more proactive, but you really do need the student to take the initiative on this.
Yeah.
Oftentimes what we find is people don't even know that they have learning differences that have held them back in the past. Some of our advisors at Graduate know now how to identify potential risk factors. And then it is a very delicate matter of hinting to the person that they might want to connect to a service that could help them assess where they are. So we talk about different learning styles. We talk about learning styles that are more successful in the current way college courses are typically taught, and how people might go about figuring out how they can be personally more successful by looking at their learning style. But Laura's right. You can't just come out and say to someone, I think you have this differential learning ability and you should go talk to someone.
Yeah, that's a delicate balance for sure. We'll go back to the phones, and we have, it looks like, perhaps another call from Bridgeton. Is Anita, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Anita. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an educator at a community college, and I see a huge problem with the students coming in ill-prepared. And I wonder if your guests could comment regarding the requirements in the high schools today don't seem to have the tracks that guide students in an academic direction if they plan to go to college. And without having parents that have attended college, the students seem to just take the minimum requirements for high school graduation, and then they come to the community college or the four-year school totally not prepared to do college-level work.
Well, thank you, Anita. And I know we did address that a little bit earlier in our conversation, but Laura, anything you can add to that about just the concerns that they're coming in and they're just not ready?
So this is a really important systemic type of issue that we just, as a society, we have to better address. We have to get the right stakeholders in place and really be committed to making a difference on this. It's really a problem when students can graduate from high school having met the requirements and for getting that high school diploma and not being academically ready to enter and succeed in college. There are a couple things there. So one is that we don't have consensus around what the right types of learning outcomes should be from high school that ensure that you're ready to go to college. There's some variation across states in how this is happening. Texas happens to be on the forefront of trying to figure this out, but there's still more progress that's needed there. There's a lot of complexity going on.
Mm-hmm. Hadass?
While everyone seems to be looking at high schools and at the school system to resolve this problem, I think the current situation requires that we look outside as well. While we still try to fix high school and what students are learning in high school and how to make that better aligned with colleges, there are other stakeholders here who can up their investment in finding new solutions. And at some point, we have to look squarely at the colleges. Right now, everyone is pushing remediation onto the community colleges, mm-hmm. and the community colleges are just bursting at the seams. Yeah. They're not getting reimbursed 100% on the work they do on remediation. If you look at what is happening at Community College of Philadelphia, they run sometimes 1,200 sessions every semester on English remediation, 900 sessions on math remediation. If you think from the point of view of the instructors, the deans, the logistics of doing something like this, then making it standardized, making sure that everyone is getting a quality education in that. But then everyone else, all the other players in higher ed, are really reaping the benefits of the community college investment. Yeah. And I think it's time for other players in the higher ed market to take on some of this burden of remediation and to do it in a way that maybe is different. So maybe learn from the lessons and do contextualized learning. So people are taking a college-level course and a remedial course at the same time. Mm. So there's content in the remedial course that translates into what they're going to be doing in their college-level learning.
So
that
you're engaging.
Right. Yeah. You want to always engage students in their learning. If someone is sitting there and they see through the learning, they understand that it's just a hoop that they have to jump through to get to the next level, it's really hard to keep a student like that engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, what do you think about those institutions that are geared to serving minority populations? I'm thinking about the HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. Certainly the minority population seems to be harder hit when it comes to college retention. Are they doing any better job? Do they have some of these things in place? What's going on with the HBCUs as it relates to retaining students?
So one of the beauties of our higher education system in the United States is we have tremendous diversity. Right, we have so many different types of colleges and universities, and then within that, we do have minority-serving institutions, including the black colleges. I think there's variation. So there are some black colleges that are doing a really good job, and there are some that are not performing as well, and that would be the same as higher education more generally.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. There are some lessons that we can learn from top-performing institutions, including the historically black colleges, about how to provide a supportive and nurturing environment that recognizes the needs, as well as the values and assets that students have. So some of this is a reframing to understand what are the characteristics of the students that we're serving and how can we use those as assets that can help ensure that they're going to be successful as they move forward.
Hadass, share with us one of your success stories from Graduate Philadelphia.
Well, we have 1,500 success stories. it's really hard to choose one. But we have a number of students now who have finished their associate's degree, have then gone on to roll that into a degree completion in a four-year college, and have recently or are just about to finish a master's degree. Now, these are people who never thought that they would have an associate's degree. And in the course of about 4 years, they've gone from having no degree to now finishing a professional degree, which has completely changed their lives, the lives of everyone around them in the community. And what we see is that they're passing it on. So they are helping other people now navigate through college, understand the pathway through and how to persevere. And they're spreading the word in their communities, yeah. which is really the foundations of creating a college-going culture in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Are you seeing more adults who have been out of the system for a while wanting to get back in, or are you seeing, you know, kids who dropped out last year?
We're seeing both.
Really?
We turn away nobody. So if someone calls us and says, I'm struggling right now, I'm in college, we find a way to help them. With the recession, we are finding more people saying, my first obligation to my family right now is to find a job. And we are a little bit concerned that the job that they find now may not sustain them long term, and that 2 years out, they'll still be in the same place.
Yeah. Laura, what kinds of things is the Obama administration doing on a national level to address this issue?
I think there are a couple of really important things. So one, under the Obama administration, we have a much clearer understanding of how important educational attainment is. I think he's done a very good job of, now people know the United States is not leading the world any longer in terms of the share of its population mm-hmm. that has at least an associate's degree. And we have articulated that as a priority. I think that's really important. A number of states and other organizations are now embracing that. And there's more room, more progress that we need to make in order to get there. But at least there's an understanding that that's important. I think a second has been around the commitment to federal financial aid. So the Pell Grant was established to provide the floor of grant aid that's provided to students who are financially needy. And there's been some variation over time in the extent to which it's been increased in a way that helps students continue to meet the needs that they have. The Pell Grant program is under a lot of pressure right now, though, because there are many more students who are eligible. The resources that are going to be required to continue to fund it at a level that we need to fund it at are just not there.
The pie is getting smaller.
Right, so that's a real challenge. And now we're trying to deal with the subsidy on the interest subsidy on subsidized loans. That's one of the current issues. So I think he's drawn attention to the importance of financial aid. There are also other initiatives going on in terms of trying to articulate how we increase college completion. And so I know within the department there's been a lot of attention to trying to understand what works, what are the types mm-hmm. of programs and practices that are really going to make a difference on this issue.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one last quick phone call before we begin to wrap up. We'll welcome Lynn to Radio Times. Hi, Lynn.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, there are a number of reasons why students drop out of college in the midst of the experience. For one thing, reality sets in too soon. They get hit with disappointments. They go in college thinking that they're going to be financially smooth sailing, and then they discover that the grants don't cover all the tuition. Of course, that's something they should have known before they entered, and the tuition goes up, and the inevitable happens. They're forced to take out a loan, and a lot of students shy away from loans, and a lot of them don't want to take the risk of coming out of college and having to pay back all this money only to find out that they're not going to be gainfully employed. They're not going to get that high-paying job like they once dreamed of.
Right.
They go in idealistic instead of realistic. And when reality hits them, they freak out, you know? Mm. It happens all the time, you know? And then a family crisis occurs, and they find out that they may have to come out of school for a while. A parent dies or whoever, mm-hmm. or dad's no longer to pay the tuition. Mommy and daddy can no longer afford to pay the tuition.
Well, then I appreciate what you're saying, and because I think, you know, to your point, there are so, so many reasons, you know, that people drop out of school. You know, it's not just that, you know, the tuition's too high, can't do it anymore. I mean, there are, as we've talked about, ladies, lots and lots of reasons, and a lot of times not anticipating, or as you put it, Hadass, looking at the big picture. So
it's important to look at the big picture, but I think it's also important to retain that idealistic vision of college and learning. College can be completely and wholly transformative at any age. Yeah. Lifelong learning. And I think more so at 18. We're all mm-hmm. idealistic at 18. Yeah. I think that is a huge you know, driver of our economy, this idealism, this outlook that, you know, things will change and I can change the world. And I think we need to support that. We need to make sure that more students can go into college realistic and idealistic at the same time so that they can complete their degree on time and be prepared for a multitude of careers. I think that the realism part is to train yourself while you're in college on a very broad set of skills that employers are always looking for, and not confine yourself just to a very narrow trajectory.
Very quickly, ladies, where can people get more resources? Where can they find more information? They're looking to go back to school. They may need some help staying in school. Hadass, what do you suggest?
GraduatePhiladelphia.org and PhillyGoesToCollege.org and PhillyGoesToCollege.com. Both those websites are the main portals for the greater Philadelphia region for people who are looking to go back to college.
Okay. Laura?
I think there are a host of resources that hopefully are available. You know, I would start with high school counselors, college counselors, and admissions staff. You need to be proactive and ask for advice. Finding people who've gone through college and try to navigate the system is also a good source of information, I think, as well as the resources that Hadass mentioned.
Yeah, lots of resources out there. The question is just making sure that you can figure out where they are and get to them so that you can get the help that you need. So, ladies, I want to thank you both so much for sharing your perspectives on this and really helping us to get a handle on why it is that we're seeing, you know, these sort of staggering numbers, but also what's being done to help make sure that that trend is being reversed and that we're keeping more and more students in school and allowing them to come out with a degree that will be useful to them. Our guests have been Hadass Sheffer, the founding executive director of Graduate Philadelphia. It's an initiative designed to increase the number of college grads. And Laura Perna has been with us. She is a professor in the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania, and she works with issues related to college access and success. And just want to let you know, too, that you can learn more about how Philadelphia students fare in the college pipeline from our partners NewsWorks and the Public School Notebook. Later this week, they'll take an in-depth look at what happened to the class of 2009 at Philadelphia's Ben Franklin High. Look for it in the latest edition of the Public School Notebook and online at newsworks.org. And I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. You've been listening to Radio Times.